tonight. I'm happy to welcome back to the store. This is your second time, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Helena Liefer. She is an artist, a psychologist, and she describes herself as a learner teacher. And she has studied the Course in Miracles now for what, 30 years or mm-hmm. About 30 years, mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I'm delighted to have her here, and she will be talking about introducing A Course in Miracles from scratch. Thank you for coming to Many Rivers.
Thank you. Thank you, too. So you guys want to stay where you are? You want to bunch up, or are you okay? Wherever you are. Good. Okay. So, how many of you have the Course and have dipped into it? Okay. No. So this is really from scratch for you. Okay, great. Carl?
And?
I didn't dip very deeply or very long.
You squeaked through. And did you? Okay. So, as I said, it's really from scratch. Jim and I were sitting one day, and he was telling me how the store was doing well in the sale of Course in Miracles books. And I also happened to hear from someone else that even Costco is selling the softcover version of the Course in Miracles, and it's selling very well. So, you never know where spirit is touching base, you know, at what point. So I thought, well, okay, let's see. And then the things I've come to here, Jim's talks mainly, and Charles has talked here too. Usually afterwards people say things about the Course in Miracles. And I happen to overhear how people are wanting to gather together and learn more together and about it, which is kind of the contradiction of the Course in Miracles. The contradiction being that the Course in Miracles is a spiritual document, a text, that can be done individually. You can go solo with the Course, and frankly, most of the people I meet are going solo with the Course. It's not a community, it's not a church, it's not a gathering, it's none of that. But then all of a sudden, the traditional and classic methods of magnetic draws of all the other spiritual practices have suddenly put Course students, you know, coming together. So we have teachers like Marianne Williamson at the Unity Church in Los Angeles gathering quite a few thousand, and Oprah Winfrey giving her, she's on permanently talking about the Course in, I think it's called Oxygen, and don't ask me about technology, I don't know anything other than which button to press. So I thought that tonight would be a good time to kind of oversee. Greg mentioned to me that he's dipping in and out of it at times. I think most people have a tendency to do that. It's a very thick. How thick is it? It's thick, okay? I happen to love that. It's in my nature to go into that kind of thickness and really find what it has to offer me. So I've been at it for a very long time. And my friend Charles mentioned to me that it would be a good idea to say something about how the Course came to me. And so, having never, ever had anything to do with psychology, therapy, psychology, blah, 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 anything related to it was considered taboo in our family. we prefer to not know anything about each other. you know, so it was really good to be fearful. It was really good to argue. It was very good to be oppositional. And I always felt like I was walking on landmines or eggshells when I was at home. So, moving around as I did in my life with my marriage and so on, I came to Los Angeles truly, truly pristine and virgin-like. I had no idea whatsoever about what metaphysics, I never heard the word before, and I had no idea about psychology. I had heard the word but flunked the course in college. And so I just took Psych 1 and got the heck out of there as fast as possible. And my family was so worried that, you know, I would rock the whole thing that they were glad that I never followed up. So let me just get to the point, and that is I really was landing in Los Angeles totally pure about any of this. No sense at all. And it was before what was then called the convergence, and I think from what I'm hearing about you, you all know a little bit about that, and if you don't, tell me and I'll tell you what that was, okay? But that's not of great importance regarding the course at this moment. So I walked the street in a place called Westlake Village, which is just outside of Los Angeles proper, and a woman walked up to me and said to me, "You're the one." And I mind you, I'm from the East Coast, and words like "you're the one," you know.
Crazy California.
I just turned around and walked the other way thinking something was really wrong. And she followed me, and I mean, she acted crazy but didn't make me afraid. There was no threat from her. And she said that there's a store opening a few blocks down called the Akashic Record, and that the store has been closed for a month because the people from the Whole World Expo are going to close down the whole thing, and that two women have bought the bookstore, and they would know a bookstore from, I don't know, think of something. What wouldn't you know a bookstore from? They didn't know a bookstore from a winery or either. And so she said, "You're the one, you're supposed to come with me." And I said to her, "Well, that's very nice, and I'll see you soon." And she said, "No, really," and guided me pushfully by my elbow and took me into this huge store. It was 1800 square feet. That's a huge store, you know. And she said, "These are the two women," and I'm looking at two of what later I learned to call hippie women, you know, meaning they really looked the part. They were cast, you know, perfectly for the role, clothing and everything otherwise. And the other woman said, "I brought this woman to you because she's going to help you." And the two of them looked at me and said, you've done bookstore work, you know everything about it, you know how to order and everything. And I said, "Nothing." And they said, "Good, you'll make it." And so to cut to the chase, they had 1,500 titles. That was it in this huge bookstore. And they had places for people to do psychology and therapy and so on, these little offices. And then a conference room in the back. And they basically said, "You do it. You get the conference room, you get everything, and since you're married to somebody who provides for you, we're not going to pay you." And I said, "Oh, that sounds terrific, okay?" Because basically Los Angeles was a deep depression for me. Not because of Los Angeles, but I was in a deep depression. So I said, "Okay, we'll go there." And they had microfiche, you know, everything on these little plastic things, and they didn't have computers, and they didn't have anything, frankly. And I thought, well, how do I start? And I remember a friend saying that when he bought a ranch, he started by shoveling shit in the horse barn, And so I thought, well, I'll just go around with index cards, you know, because other than duct tape, index cards are the answer to everything. And so I'll go around with index cards and just check out the books and write them down so at least we know what books we have. That seemed like shoveling shit to me. And so I did, and as I walked around, nothing was familiar to me. I thought it was truly me entering the evil and the wicked of the world, and that I just really was going to be sent to hell because everything about the bookstore was just the worst. And so I just started to look around, and as I told my friend Charles, I'm down on the floor, you know, trying to, pushing this cart with index cards, and it took me, by the way, it took me 6 weeks of continuous 10 hours a day of writing this by hand. And then a book fell off the shelf and literally hit me on the head. And I fell over, and I seemed to have somewhat of a concussion. And the two women said, well, get up and keep working. And I thought, okay. So I stood up and I picked up the books. And just so you know, this is what fell on my head. And all three of them, they come in plastic cover, you know, when they're shipped. And so this fell on my head, and I looked at them, and of course to me it was a terrible curse because it looked like a Bible of some kind, you know, in this navy blue covering, and I thought, I'm going to die, you know, because my family said, you know, do not read the Bible under any circumstances. And I said, okay. But what my parents did say was Jesus was a nice guy. That was all I ever heard. Jesus was a nice guy and a good carpenter. Okay? So I thought, okay. You know, because when I opened the book, it said it was written and channeled by Jesus. And I didn't know what channeling was either. So, and I don't think I still do, okay? So, maybe somebody can tell me. But, so this is the original, and by original I mean, once it was published, this is what the course looked like. And then there are soft cover, which Jim has put over there. But, and if you notice, I have destroyed, you know, and my friend laughs at me because I write in the margins of the book because I'm constantly having a discourse and a challenge with the guide, you know, asking all the time. I'm talking the whole time. It's really a very, very personal experience, and I have gone solo. I have not gone anywhere to get anything from anybody else. I have a tendency to do that anyway, but so that was how the course came, and then I started to read it because I thought it was obvious that if it was going to fall on me, I'd better take a look. And I started to read it, and I started to walk around, and if you had extra vision of some kind, you would see that there was a very big black cloud that was getting bigger and blacker over my head. And I could not believe, and I couldn't understand a word it said, but could not stop reading it. Because I felt like love was literally marinating and seeping through me, and I didn't know what that was. I had not a sense of it at all. So I didn't call it love, I called it fear. And later, many years later, I find the Course saying something like that, which is, we as identified as egos, and I will tell you what that is, have a tendency to think that love is fear. So we run from it. You know, the picture of Adam and Eve going out of the Garden of Eden is a pretty good symbol for that. We run because we prefer fear, and fear being the false experience of our life, rather than to experience the complete unlimitedness and freedom that is being offered, you know, that we came in for to begin with. So I began to sit home incessantly, other than to go to the bookstore every day and do the cataloging. I sat home through the whole night and just read and read. And I read the text completely and thoroughly, front to back, in a period of maybe 4 months. I don't suggest you do that, okay? I mean, it just literally marinated and saturated me totally. And then I began to write in German, and I do speak Spanish. This is my English, forgive me. And I do understand, you know, the Latin-based languages. But I started to write and speak in German. It was like a channel opened up, and I wrote, you know, those little notebooks that you get in school, the black and white ones, composition books. I wrote 4 or 5 of them in poetry and everything in German as this was going on. And it wasn't a question of, should I do it, shouldn't I do it? It was, do it or die. You know, it was not a question at all. And so I would sit for hours by a window at a desk and just let it all pour out. And that, I guess, is channeling, okay? So the what I call the creative channel opened for me, and that's it all began to pour out. I also started writing in French. I also started hearing a voice telling me what to do all the time. And when I say a voice, it's not like what you're hearing right now. It was more like communication or communion, but I didn't understand anything other than to do what it said. It felt closer to me than the beating of my heart. It was just not a question. And so I read and read and read, and then I dared dip into the workbook, which is 365 lessons, one for each day. And I did everything it said, and you know, there's a very funny movie called The Frisco Kid with Gene Wilder and Harrison Ford. And they're both caught in the West, and Gene Wilder is a Jewish rabbi, and Harrison Ford is a cowboy. And suddenly the Indians come, and the chief Indian steals the Bible that is being carried by, what's his name? Gene Wilder. And he holds it, he goes to his tent, and he reads the whole Bible, and then he says, he holds it up to his whole tribe and he says, I have read this and I didn't understand one word, okay? And basically that's how I felt even after reading, but it was speaking to me and I could not do it. So that was the workbook. And then immediately after I went to the teacher's manual and I found that light and, believe it or not, entertaining, okay? It was just a lot easier, you know, to read that, and it gave me the meaning of many words that were not there. So the course is very dense, very thick, and by that I mean it's not the kind of thing you sit down and read like anything else and then you get it, okay? The course is written in iambic pentameter, which is a beautiful, beautiful rhythmic way to read it. It's also written in a spiral form, so I would get very angry and say, you're talking about trust, what do you mean about trust, we're in, you know, and then 5, 6 chapters later, the spiral goes around and it tells you what it means about trust. And the reason I believe for that is that it's not meant to be read linear, you know, logic type of way. It really is meant to completely exfoliate you, to totally take apart outmoded thinking system that's been there evaluating for a very, very long time. And so it does that. It just literally peels you back more and more and more and more. And I can honestly say after all these years that I have a wonderful relationship with the course, and so that it's funny, it's not funny, it's serious, it's not serious, it's truly fundamental, it's not fundamental, but there isn't a day that I don't do my lesson in the morning and in the evening, and that's been years. I can't not do it. And there isn't a day where I don't confer with that which has rooted itself in me and marinated me. And so that if I'm doing whatever, even now as I'm doing it, I'm listening for guidance somewhere inside me. And it's become less of a separated state. It's become more of a unified state. So it used to be I'd have to sit at a table at a particular time in a particular way and then wait. Now I don't. I just, it's all kind of immediate, you know, as it's happening. But don't think it's, Course says, I am simple, I am easy, I am constant, I am consistent, and this is truly a complete, totally complete whole system of thought. And I get very angry with it when it says all those things, okay? But I realize that the anger that's occurring is not who I am. It's really my identifications with the fact that it should be something else. And the Course tells you from the very beginning, it was on the day when we, as a thinking species, decided that things were not the way that we wanted them to be, that the whole problem started. Okay, so it was from that point on, and so if you're experiencing yourself arguing with a cat because it's meowing and it's not barking, the Course is a really good thing for you to read, because any arguing with the way things manifest is ridiculous. And not only that, but if it's manifested, the Course leads you in a beautiful, beautiful way to see how the manifestation of something is truly the lesson, and how it truly, truly, truly lets you learn how whatever has manifested from the chair to you, to me, to anybody here, to the building itself, whatever has manifested as a result of the courage to face your own imagination and what you can do with it. So it's been very interesting to read it. The one thing about the Course is that the language is also thick, and the thing that bothers me the most, and it seems to bother, and there's a book here by somebody called Kenneth Wapnick, and I'll tell you who he is, and he answers very well, I think, not because I'm rating him or evaluating him, but it's nice to read that somebody made this effort. He and his wife, Gloria, are part of the original team that birthed and midwifed the Course. And it's very interesting to see that the questions I asked myself and didn't have anybody to help me with, he pretty much lets you know. So this is very interesting if you want that. But I do think you can dip into the Course yourself and do it whatever way. The Course itself tells you, I know I set it all up, and if you do it from page one all the way to the end through the three books, you'll think you're doing it right. But right is not what the Course is looking for. It's looking for you to really create a relationship. Like my friend Charles works with the I Ching, and you know, he creates a relationship with the sage, and I know you're working with poetry and sonnets, and so it's a complete relationship that's happening the whole time. So this is interesting, and I would suggest it for those of you especially who have been in the Course for quite a long time and think you're weird and you're out in the left field somewhere. You'll find that almost everyone asks the same questions, okay? But the one thing that stayed for a long time is, for me, I found this in a magazine years ago and made a poster out of it, but the Course uses the word it over and over and over again, and you don't know if it's referring to what. So it's like, it'll say it, and you don't know if it's referring to the adjective, the verb, the noun, what's the topic here. So the it has been truly a place where I tangle with the course. There's so many it's in the course, and it's very hard to tell what it's referring to. But frankly, if you really look at the use of it in our everyday language, in our everyday experience, it's equally worthless, okay? So it's just, you know, loaded up with whatever meaning. It's a container for meaning. And you have to work with the it, which is, again, bringing you into a layer with the course where you just can't skim, because there might be three it's in the sentence or in the paragraph, and you can't just skim through. You're really going to have to spend the time relating with it. And I do want to tell you that there are days where I can read the course and I really know exactly what the it is referring to. But most of the time, it's very, very hard, because I'm used to reading what I call shortcut books, you know, books that are very linear thinking and tell me where to go, what to do, and who to do it with, and so on. The course doesn't do that in that sense, okay? So it's a very important thing. Just to go back for a second, working in that bookstore reading the course, I finally put a piece of paper on the counter, as maybe this kind of counter, and I just begged, literally begged. I said, does anybody know what this book is about? And if you would like to meet with me on Monday night to just talk about what this book is about. And it stayed on the counter for a month, and people started signing up. And then the two women were really pissed because we weren't charging anything. So they charged $3 jokingly for the Trinity, okay? And I just want you to know, 55 people showed up the first night. And for a year and a half, I had somewhere between 45 and 55 people coming regularly to work on the course and make it about as interesting. And every Wednesday, I would sit in that little chair by that little window, and I would say, what do you want me to do next Monday? And I would be told exactly where to go, what to do, and so on and so forth. And it worked out great until the course guide, your spirit, thought it's time for her to get her butt kicked and you know, make her go out in the world, because I had just barely been interested in anything going on outside anymore. And the course started, the group started closing and closing and closing into less and less and less people. Then finally it was around 8 people, and a woman walked in that had just moved from New Hampshire, and she said, I'm a Course in Miracles teacher, can I do a class? And I said yes, and I had signed up to become a psychologist here in San Francisco. So that too was as a result of the guide telling me to go to school. And I have to tell you, all of it, no matter what it was, kept happening without my solicitation, without any kind of expectation, without my knowledge or my being informed or anything. I just basically was a sheep, a mule, you know, in the most positive sense of that. I was being guided, and I loved it very much. But I don't want you to think that everybody has this happen to them. Charles, you want to say something about the way it happened to you? You got the course, and it made you happy as punch right at the beginning.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah. I someone handed me the books, and I just started the workbook right away. And I just was doing the lessons just... I didn't get anything out of them until about 40 days in. Something happened in a business meeting. I was have some whole totally new thought happened in the business meeting that was, I said, where did that come from? Because it wasn't my thought. And it was a very compassionate perspective on my least favorite member of my team. And after that, I was hooked. And I, yeah, it was very, it was much more joyful than painful. Because I didn't read the text for a long time. Actually, I just did the lessons. I had no idea what it was about. I didn't try to figure it out in my mind. So just doing the lessons was enough to shift my own thinking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the book, you know, which is 622 pages, is a deeply, as I said, thick philosophical treatise, you know, on just about everything. So just to give you an idea, the Course deals with two evaluations, okay? And by two evaluations, it means that we are, in a sense, a two-headed monster. One evaluation we make is based on old notions. So it goes back to the Gnostics, it goes back to Plato, it goes back to God knows where the idea came from. But ideas, the Course says, never leave the mind. So there's a storage unit somewhere, and it's got all the ideas there. And so all these evaluations, you know, you wonder to yourself, I heard about somebody sitting in a, standing in a shower stall and singing, "Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy." And she had no background at all in Catholicism or Christianity or anything. And she was singing, and because she's a Course in Miracles student, she said, "Where did that thought come from? You know, where did that song come from?" It's, you know, so you are loaded, loaded, loaded with two evaluations. One evaluation definitely tells you that you are an ego and you're identified, and in psychology they might call it, and I'm not diagnosing here and I don't agree with it, but you might call it a complex, which is a bunch of I's. I need, I want, I should, I ought, I can't, I won't. And I call it, you know, the Course doesn't say this, but I've called it that. There is the will, I will to will thy will, which is probably the most important words I ever say in my life. I will to will thy will. And the other voice says, I won't, I won't, I won't. Okay, I won't, I won't. And the funny part is human beings have called them wills, so that the I's, I wish, I want, I desire, I dream, I can't, I won't, the Course says that all of those I's don't exist at all. They're identifications, okay? And in case you're wondering, how the heck did that get in my mind? The Course is going to take you, I mean, through every single one of them, okay? And it says the only way to get back is to go through this thought system, knowing that you're in the safest, most gentle, kindest, sweetest guidance you'll ever, ever experience as you're going back through. And it's almost like when you have a belief, and let's use the analogy of belief and a fish. Belief equals fish. When you stick your net in the water, you get a whole school of fish. All the beliefs come up. So you have beliefs regarding hate. You have beliefs regarding love. All of them are conceptual. I was working with a client the other day, and she looked at the lemon tree outside my window, and she said, "I hate lemons." And I said, "And what are lemons?" And she looked at me and she said, "What are you, an idiot?" And I said, "Could be." And I said, "Well, what are you talking about?" And she said, "Lemons, right there, lemons." And I said, "Okay." And I said, "Let's walk out and get one." And she said, "All right." We went outside, we got a lemon, we brought it back in the house. And I said, "This is a lemon." And she said, "Yes." And I said, "And what is a lemon?" And she says, "A lemon is a yellow thing, you know, that you put in tea," and you know, she had all the ideas. These are all conceptual overlays. It's like a coat that you're wearing. It tells you nothing about the lemon. Lemon conceptually, we could talk. Lemon, what is a lemon? Not a chance. Then another client was telling me the other day that she's on Facebook and is very, very, very upset because everybody is being exposed as to what they do, where they go, and there's no privacy, and she's terrified, and she feels threatened, and she's afraid, and so on and so forth. And I said, what is this about no privacy? And she said, there isn't any. You know everything about everybody. And I said, well, that's really weird. I said, because I've known you for 3 years, and I don't know anything about you. I said, I know what you like, and I know what you don't like, and I know what you prefer, and I know what you don't prefer. And like Greg said earlier, I know what's appropriate, and I know what's inappropriate. But those are all concepts. Those are concepts kind of floating in the air. And those are thoughts that rise and fade, and we invest in totally. So we will invest in what is Obama, and everybody will run around absolutely sure they know what Obama is, private in the deepest soul spirit part of that man. Okay? And instead of that, we form clusters, complexes, groups, and so on, making believe that we know what something is. And all we know is the concept. And even then, we can't agree. So, two evaluations. The Course in Miracles gives you a complete, total, whole system of thinking that guarantees that it is so complete that it will totally undo all these beliefs. Okay? And by the way, when you see the word belief, the word that is attached to it is behavior. You can't have a belief without a behavior. They come together. You have a thought, you act out on the thought. And you always wonder, well, where did it come from? Okay? Well, to try to trace it back to where it came from, psychology used to say, if you could only get back to where a thought began, you know, then if you can get back to the exact moment when the rape occurred, or where you can get back to, and all my colleagues that I've known and all those I've ever read and so on cannot get back to that. There's no way to get back, you know, to that instant when the belief took place and the behavior took place, and to trace it in any way. So the second of, you know, evaluation, which I put first now, is the Course's evaluation, so the two-headed monster, and it calls it the higher evaluation, and it calls the other the lower evaluation. And the point is to dissolve and to rid oneself of, to let go, and it isn't a muscular thing, you know, it's not like let go or push it away. Or even because we're so used to our identifications as eyes that we have no way of telling which eye we're going to keep and which eye we're not. So two evaluations, and without detail, because again, this is about Course in Miracles from scratch, there's much, much, much that can be said about these two evaluations. So let me just take you through some of the things, okay? You see okay, Grant? Okay, so primary, and again, this is about what we call opposing thought systems. Okay, the Course says opposition, going against. I look at it as contrast, and I think contrast is very important. The Course in Miracles says it teaches by contrast. No, 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 and therefore you know yes, 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 that type of thing. So the Course says that what happened to us was from, you know, created fear, and I'm sure you've all seen this, false experience appearing real. Okay, so it's pure imagination, it's fantasy, it's ghost, it's whatever it is. If you saw the movie Coma, you know, all these bodies floating, dreaming, believing that what they're doing is actually true. I was listening to Radiolab, which is an NPR radio show that appears, what's today? Thursday, Wednesday night, okay? And they were talking about pilots actually experiencing at 12 G's, you know, 2 G's is about all I can handle. They were at 9 G's and 12 G's in these mock airplanes. And they were actually experiencing their eyes, meaning I am fishing, and you would see the pilots sitting in the cockpit of this mock plane going, and the whole movement of fishing, but there was no fishing going on at all. It was purely his imagination taking him to fishing. And so you would see another pilot experiencing something like, you know, and he would be in the dentist's office having teeth drilled, but he was really sitting in the cockpit. Oliver Sacks, a neurologist, has written quite a few books about phantom limbs and so on and so forth. So just skimming, fear, false experience appearing real. So we live on our imagination, and it's one of the two-headed monsters. The Course in Miracles says that is not who you are. Who you are is very real, and it calls us light beings, L-I-G-H-T, okay? So fear, the opposite would be love, and this isn't love that is describable at all, okay? This is an experience, a true, true experience of love, and that is who we are, love and light, okay? Another opposite would be sickness and wellness. So the Course in Miracles says, anybody who's read the Course want to tell me what sickness is? No? Okay. Sickness, if wellness is what you're supposed to be and are, sickness would be contrary to that, okay? Just basic. So sickness would be what? I said if you're using imagination and fear, what would you be using in sickness? You would still be using imagination, okay? And you have heard the words, this is beyond my imagination. There is a beyond the imagination. And I've also heard Jungian analysts and others say imagination is God, and the Course in Miracles says, yes, that's true, because God is also an idea. And then there's something beyond that, okay? Anything we can name, label, put a tag on, sell a book on, write, whatever, has been tagged already. You're working in the conceptual realm. It's not the lemon. It's the concept about the lemon. My ex-husband's uncle was the head interpreter at the Nuremberg trials and spoke 12 languages, and he wrote a book called Naming Day in Eden, where Adam stood and went, lemon, chair, I mean, I'm exaggerating, lemon, tree, woman, and so on. And it was then that, thank you, then that we started to develop a conceptual situation. So the Arabs and the Jews in Israel are fighting over conceptual ideology. There's nothing real about it, is what the Course would say. Another opposite would be outside and inside. Okay, the Course says, do not outsource, insource. And what would it mean by that? Take a guess. There is no right or wrong. If it says, do not outsource, and you're in this column, what would you be doing?
Be owning everything as an internal representation rather than having the you-me duality, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Me and world duality.
Okay. So everything would be a symbol, in a sense. Okay. A representation. I think that was a great word.
Well, on that, I would say that if you can perceive it, you've got it in you.
Okay, that's very good you mentioned that. The Course says there's perception, and then there's not, okay? And it tells you truth is not perception. I don't want to go deep into all of this because it'll just make you all very confused at this point. I just want you to know that the opposites in the Course in Miracles are constant. You cannot go through a paragraph where you're not doing that. And what's my experience is at this point, after all these years working with someone or even speaking to a friend or even talking to you right now, the way to stay in balance is I almost immediately, as soon as I hear outside, engage inside. As soon as I hear wrong, I engage right. Both happen at the same time in my mind as often as I can.
Is there a neutral place where one can look at both conditions without judging one as wrong and the other as right, or outside or inside?
This is just the way I've interpreted the Course, because I am not an expert. Course would say no, there isn't a middle ground at all. And judgment, by the way, is what the Course says we need to let go of. Not just a little bit, but 100%. You can't have 99% judgment. Mm-hmm. It's either all or nothing. Okay? And that we're human beings that judge, that's what we do. And so therefore we have to go through all the judgments and find the balance. Like justice, you know, with the scales, whatever's over here is over here, and so on and so forth. So then another would be, Course says there's a problem and there's an answer, and the Course says there's only one problem and only one answer. And rather than go through the whole thing, once you start the Course, that's really where it's going to take you almost right away. And that is, the problem is that you believe you are a body, and the Course says you are not a body, you are free, you are as God made you. Okay, you did not create yourself, you made yourself up. Yeah, okay, this is all made up. I made this up, you made that up, you made that up. Okay, but that's not creating. So creating is not a term where you can have an opposite. You can have constructing and deconstructing, but creation does not have an opposite. Truth doesn't have an opposite. Peace doesn't have an opposite, according to the Course. So they would never fall in this list. Okay? So the opposite of peace is not war. Okay? There's war and there's war, and then we'd have to work with both sides of that, because that's all there is in a sense. And then there's peace, and peace is an experience that cannot have an opposite at all. You can't compare it to anything, because then you would be making it up again. The other way to say make up would be to say pretend. Another way would be fantasize. Okay? Imagine. The Course says we are dreaming. We are dreaming that we have left our home right now. As you are experiencing me and yourself, you are presently in this instant dreaming, and you're dreaming yourself in this room, you're dreaming yourself in the gym and on this bookstore here, you're dreaming the whole situation completely. This is a dream, okay? That's not a reality. And it can be, the Course says, tremendous fun, and you can be happy. Or the Course says you can be right or be happy. And by that, ironically, it's telling you that if you're insisting on being right all the time, you're missing out on the happy part altogether. And this investment that you have to have it your way, and that the cat really needs to bark, it's very important. Or what's going on with the greenhouse effect and so on. This is all conceptual, human beings coming up with all of that. Nothing wrong, nothing right. That's what we do. But it's not true. And to tell you what the Course says is true would be something you would have to experience, and you do when you read the Course. You know, it really happens to you. So another one would be getting and giving. The Course says to give is to receive. So for instance, if I'm doing my artwork, I'm giving to myself, and I'm receiving, because that is instantaneous. So I don't have to run out and try to corral somebody to give me something. You know, it's not part of what the Course is looking at all. Getting is outsourcing. Getting means I make up that particular person that I'm spending time with is going to give me what I need because I'm lacking something. And as long as I'm empty, as long as I have a void, I'm lacking, and therefore somebody better fill me up. Okay? Does that sound familiar at all? So that's what we do. Blindness or vision. Okay? So in the two-headed monster, most of the time is spent in blindness, even though we think we see. And just as an example, I don't know if you've seen Helen Keller's, the movie about Helen Keller, The Miracle Worker, with Patty Duke and Bancroft. Remember when she's trying to communicate with her that there is a concept for water, and this young woman, Helen Keller, can't see, can't hear, and is dumb, can't talk. And so the only thing she has is touch. And Anne Bancroft, the teacher, is trying to sign W-A-T-E-R, W-A-T-E-R. Imagine trying to get the concept W-A-T-E-R, like lemon, okay, at the same time that you're trying to get what water is. Water, I mean, water is not W-A-T-E-R. And then all of a sudden the light goes on in Helen Keller's mind, and you can see it in the film or if you read the book. And at that moment, she's able to make the connection that we make as conceptual human beings. Water becomes W-A-T-E-R, okay? So she's able to communicate with other human beings, but water is not W-A-T-E-R. Water is elemental and beyond description of any kind. So identification, again, all the I's, I am, I need, I want, I ought to, and there's a complex of them. They come in clusters. And identity, the Course says, is who you are. So the only identity you have that it even gives you a hint about is light. You are light, so you are mind, capital M. And so almost like a mine worker that goes into the mine and has that light, you know, and goes into the darkness and then all of a sudden sees, if you were not light, you wouldn't get anything. Dead zone, darkness, okay? So identity is that. And I'm really simplifying this. Ignorance and intelligence, I like to work with the word ignorance as not as in stupid or dumb or anything like that. Those are judgments. I like the fact that one ignores one's intelligence, and therefore one is ignorant. Not ignorant, but ignorant. If you ignore your intelligence, I have a client about 2 weeks ago who said to me, I've just spent a year in this relationship, and I have dumbed down. I have dumbed myself as much as I could because I wanted to get what I could from this relationship. So she dumbed and dumbed, which meant she was ignoring her intelligence. And what is your intelligence? Your intelligence in the Course in Miracles is the Holy Spirit. That's your intelligence. You are not it. Your intelligence comes through you. Okay, you are the projector. Meaning this physiology that we call physiology is projecting the light, okay? Then there's guilt and innocence. What would you imagine guilt would be?
It's a feeling that you've done something wrong.
Yeah, it's a feeling you've done something wrong. And who's done something wrong?
What do you think you personally have done?
Well, Greg said,
I
did something wrong. So I'm going to spend the next 3 days trying to figure out how to beat up somebody because they did something wrong. But it's an I, and according to this, the I is false experience appearing real, why invest in it? Is this completely contrary to anything that you would think? Okay? Because it's saying, what's the use of fighting and, you know, killing and murdering and so on and so forth for the sake of an I? Okay? So guilt would be, and the Course constantly talks about that, guilt is a pile up of I's that have done something wrong, that have sinned. And the Course in Miracles says, there is no sin. And I brought this because a client brought it to me a few months ago. It's an eraser, okay? And it says, forbid mistakes. And the Course in Miracles basically says, I am your eraser. If you're investing in an I, and you're fighting other people over it, and you are coercing, and by the way, it says, don't even trust your good intentions. Your good intentions are also coming from an I. So, I mean, it's saying one thing and one thing only, get in touch with your guide and that's it. There's no other choice, okay? So the big mistake, the Course is giving you one of these and it's saying no sin, okay? There is no sin. So again, depending on which evaluation you're working with, but in my time with the Course, I find it easier and easier and easier and simpler, kinder, gentler, sweeter, and definitely what I would call more loving, to come to the place of this kind of evaluation. Because as a psychologist, when I sit with people and I listen to what they're saying, what did Christ say on the cross? Forgive them, for they know not what they do. Not because I am someone better that knows what they do, but because both of us don't know what we do if we're spending time with the complex of eyes. Okay? So one of the questions I always ask when somebody's talking with me one-on-one is, who is I? Who is I? Who is I? And Ramana Maharshi used to say that, I think. Rajneesh, who is now called something else.
Osho.
The question constant. King Arthur walks in for the Holy Grail and says, whom do you serve? Okay, it's again, I. And I mean, invest there and... Well, I think, well, you know, those kinds of investments are what we're looking at. Enron invested there. You know, Bank of America's investing there. Wells Fargo is investing there. And we're all buying into the eyes all the time. Again, this isn't wrong, it isn't right, it's the condition. But if we start spending time going, it's wrong, it's right, we're reinforcing that kind of egotistical thing. Grandiosity and grandeur. The Course says grandeur is what's natural to you. I mean, how can you not be grander? It's, you know, grace and grandeur is who you are. Grandiosity is when the ego, I, you know, pulls it into its own evaluation, and then it's completely different. Can you give me an example of that? Of grandiosity? Those are easy, guys.
when we get puffed up about something.
Yeah. When you get puffed up,
yeah.
Right. Or puffed down.
Or puffed down.
Yeah. Okay. I am the lowest, and I'm lagging, and I don't have anything, and I'm worthless, and, you know, and I'll meet you at the bottom of this. That's grandiosity. Okay, so you can have a negative inflation, which is what I was just kind of demonstrating, and you can have a positive inflation, which is what Greg was talking about. Another one would be littleness and magnitude. Of course, believes magnitude is your natural state of being. Littleness is you telling yourself that you are not God's creation. Not only that, but you're bumping chests with God, and you're going to tell God what he or she or it or whatever you want to call it ultimately did wrong with you. Okay? Too fat, too thin, too tall, too thin, not blonde, the eyes have it. And by the way, that statement is the one to look for. The eyes have it. Okay? And then, and by the way, I'm only hitting on a few, very few. I just want you to really be aware in tomorrow as you leave today, in your dreams, daytime dreams, nighttime dreams, that's what we're doing, to really be aware of the opposites and to hear yourself call the other side in, okay? And I was talking to Charles, I think, the other day, and we both realized when you have one side or the other, you also have the potential for the third. And have you all heard about the third that rises as a result of you holding the tension between the opposites? You don't go for one, you don't go for the other, because you don't know what any one of them is. Hi, thanks for coming. And so you don't know what they really are, and your eyes are making all this decision. Sit still with it. Something else rises. Okay? Does anybody have an example of that? No?
Well, the one that I remember when you started calling it the third was the relationship that arises between two people who are in relationship. The relationship itself.
Yes.
Is the third thing.
Yes. The Course in Miracles says the holiest spot on earth is the place where a grudge or grievance with the exact person in the exact spot and under the exact same circumstances turns into something else altogether. And I can take it to a psychosomatic level. A friend and I are walking on the beach and he's limping, you know, because he's got a knee problem, and the doctors told him he had a knee problem, and it's a terrible knee problem, and it's not to be questioned. And then all of a sudden something happens on the beach. I'm making this up so I can't think of what could happen, but something happens on the beach that distracts him. And suddenly he raises himself up at the age of 72 and he goes running down the beach, and I meet him down at the other end of the beach and I say, wow, even with your organic disorder, you were able to run a quarter of a mile down the beach. What do you think of that? And he says, oh yeah, but I'm really very much in pain, and so on and so on and so forth. Okay, so this is not to degrade or demean or denigrate the person. But to reinforce the fact that a chronic condition is permanent and terminal is to make a chronic condition terminal. Okay? So the Course spends almost all of it, and any of you who have dipped into a Course know, mind and body. Okay? I am not a body. I am free. I am as God's will made me. So you're wondering, well, what the hell? And like I told you, people in the cockpit that are being tested are having different bodies. I worked in my internship at Langley Porter, and there were people who had what's known as multiple personality disorder, which has been changed in the new DSM. But there were people who had cancer and were terminal and would switch personalities and would have no cancerous cells whatsoever. I mean, ask yourself what that really, really, really means, and then go talk to someone at Kaiser, okay? Not to degrade again, but it's just two evaluations, two completely different evaluation systems. Darkness and light, we've gone pretty much through that and only skimmed it. The Course spends a lot of time, again, marinating you, and it's truly beautiful, from my perspective, thought system. Separation and unity. Greg, you were talking about I and inflation and blowing up, you know. So separation would be that, would it not? Okay, and unity would be what? Take a guess, Jim.
Unity would
the lack of boundaries.
Right. Unlimited. Boundaryless. Don't try to think about it, because the thought is already a limitation.
Okay. What should we do with it then?
There is the question, what should we do, is putting you in a limitation, okay? But the Course itself, as it marinates you, you'll have the experience of that. And then, you know what, they've called it out of body, like you were in the body to begin with. And what the Course says is that you are way beyond. You know, there's a psychologist, a Jungian psychologist, that draws a circle and then draws a little tiny, tiny circle on the bottom of the other circle or any other place and says, this is the ego, the I. And that, which is boundaryless, is who you are. And this is a Jungian psychologist, not a Course in Miracles person.
So he drew a circle to show that it was boundaryless. Sounds like he was drawing a boundary to show that it was boundaryless.
That's why I'm telling it. That's why I'm telling it. It's very hard to talk about. Very, very hard. The experience that the Course brings you to, you know. A client said to me, the Course must be like Jenny Craig. All you have to do is eat the food and you lose the weight. Okay? And I thought, you know. So, ego and one, illusion and reality. What would be illusion?
That's again the dream that we have a separate existence.
The dream that we are separate, that you're over there and I'm over here, and I'm so lonely because you're over there and I'm over here. And, you know, oh my God, if we don't get together, I'm going to die. Which, by the way, I already am. Okay? So, ego and oneness. The opposites define themselves in a way, because you're looking at both sides.
Isn't that just like separation and unity?
Yeah.
It's an example of separation.
Yeah. There's, Jim has a book here in the store that is by one of my old teachers. Well, she wouldn't be happy if I called her old. Once upon a time teacher, Frances Vaughan and Roger Walsh, they're both therapists. And they wrote this a long time ago. They just pulled excerpts from The Course in Miracles. They're beautiful gift books. We're going into the season now. Accept this gift. It's just gorgeous. A gift of peace and a gift of healing. But it says about the ego. The ego is quite literally a fearful thought. The ego is your belief. The ego is a confusion in identification. Notice identification begins with I. This fragment of your mind is such a tiny part of it that could you but appreciate the whole, whole, you would see instantly that it is like the smallest sunbeam to the sun, or like the faintest ripple on the surface of the ocean. That little I, that little ego, everything you and I and all of us are investing what we call our lives in, can sit on a pinhead. Everything else is what you are. Everything else is what you are. And it's not an else. The else is the ego. Okay? So then it says, it is amazing arrogance. This tiny sunbeam has decided it is the sun. This almost imperceptible ripple hails itself as the ocean. Think how alone and frightened is this little thought, this infinitesimal illusion, holding itself apart against the universe. Do not accept this little fenced-off aspect as yourself. The sun and the ocean are as nothing beside what you are. Okay. And one of my clients read that piece and did this collage. I hope you can see it well enough. And the circle is what you and I were just talking about. You're circling a portion in. And the fragmentation that takes place when you go into these schizophrenic eyes, okay, By the way, there isn't anybody on the planet at this time that, if we were to diagnose, would not be schizophrenic, okay? So the question is, who is really schizophrenic? And that is someone who doesn't have a director that rallies the eyes. Because as I'm talking about the eyes, you're not falling apart, okay? You get it. But there are people who don't have a director at all working on the eyes. So no manager, okay? So this was her experience of fragmentation. So this is the little tiny space that she projected a story onto. And without disclosing the story, you can imagine, you know, plenty. I'll pass it so you can look at it closer if you would like to. But that's an experience of what happens to us when we become attached to the fact that we are bodies. And that's what her experience in images is. Then what about, you used the words improper and proper. Do you remember what you said? It was wonderful.
I mean, just my experiences with the course were appropriate.
Yes, I thought it was appropriate.
Yeah. I guess you could take it there.
Yeah, well, what Greg said was that he opens the course and it astonishes him how incredibly appropriate the message is for that exact instant. And the course says that's the only time the course is right on, because it's asking you to work now. Now, 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 now. And, you know, we don't spend any time there at all, really. And the course also says it's your concept of time that's keeping you from being where you are. I'll do it soon, maybe. I don't know, perhaps, preoccupied, I'm busy, I postpone, that kind of thing. So you go into the story. Lower and higher, we talked about. Limited and free, what would that be? You had it.
Well, we talked about that some already.
Yeah, we did.
That limited is being bounded by, say, the skin.
Yes. By the bag.
Right.
Okay. No offense. Okay. What would free be? What would free be? What would free?
Unlimited. Not limited.
Right. Unlimited. So, you know, because people think freedom is being let out of jail, or people think freedom is being a guard in jail, and the course tells you constantly that if you are a guard in jail, you too are a prisoner. You know, so it's very interesting, because people, when they talk about particular subject matter, don't realize that their mind has already voted for the other side. You can't talk about mind without body. You can't talk about darkness without light. You can't talk about illusion. So you're taking both of them in, even though you think you're only taking one of them in. Okay? Last but not least, the good old evil and good. What would be evil? Remember, this column all has to do with dreaming, imagination, and in many ways, so does that one too, except the course says we want to transition you from all this negative inflation, you know, to at least something positive. So then God, it literally says God will reach down and pull you up. And it doesn't mean you'll see a big hand. Okay? So the course is saying, if you're spending all this time in a negative inflation, you're totally and completely in blindness, and you're in an eclipse. It's like you're like this, and you can't see or anything, and all you have is the conceptual self feeding you, feeding you, feeding you. There's a woman who was housed, what is her name, Bhutto?
Helen Bhutto. Are you talking about the Pakistani?
The Pakistani woman. Uh-huh. And she was housed in prison, you know, in her own, in a house for quite a long time, and found herself not being able to talk or move her jaw after a while. The tension and everything had completely locked her in, and it took her a very long time to come back out. Basically, that's what the system of evaluation, the two heads are doing. One is keeping you totally inside yourself, you know, in that kind of mentality. And you even believe you're outside, but you're still carrying the mentality. And I'm sure you've heard people say, I moved to France just to get away and be a whole new person. And some part of you clucks, you know, somewhere in your mind, because they took themselves to France and they're experiencing the same person. They're not even seeing what might be in France. Should they be able to see it? So these are the opposites, and I just wanted to give you a hint. But more than anything else, remember that the negative inflation can be fit on the top of a pin. And today's day and age, if you were to see the ticker tape on, I don't have television. My girlfriend told me to say Fox News. If you, you know, they have this ticker going, and you see all the terrible stuff and all the terrible stuff, and there's more terrible stuff and all of that. And they say if they really were to print the truth, which is what is so fantastically beautiful that's really going on, that ticker tape that runs for days and hours and that would be on the top of the head of a pin. Okay? That's how little negative inflation really is. And it can be burst, literally. I'm using an analogy, you know, the head of a pin, and, you know, pop completely off. Like the circle in the collage, you know, after working through all of this, she came to tremendous laughter. And the Course in Miracles says my favorite phrase of all, and that is, this all happened on the day that God forgot to laugh. Okay? God just, you know, basically the Course is saying, this is not serious. It really isn't. But boy, can we make it so by reinforcing the I. So, how am I doing, time-wise?
It's about 8 minutes to nine.
Okay, so I'm... Okay. Just wanted to show you. I'm a collage artist. I just pulled this. This is today. Hate. Okay, which is not even an emotion the Course calls in. I can't even understand what this means. But this is hate, and this is innocence. Can you see it?
It's supposed to be Jesus.
Yeah. But this is what absolutely triggers us, almost like in Pavlov's experiment, you know, that pigeon is going to go, and this image is going to be hate, and this image is going to be innocent. And as I go through magazines, you know, constantly cutting and pasting, you would be astonished at the hypnagogic suggestibility of all of it. And we're just, you know, it's like sitting there with a straw sucking up the imagery all day long. And I don't mean looking at magazine. You're on the radio, you know, television. We won't even talk about Facebook. Okay? So there. Here, what I gave you, just so you can take it home, Kenneth Wapnick and the gang, the original people, tells you the story of how the Course came. That's why I've skipped over the basics of how the Course came about. And it gives you a wonderful introduction to what the Course loves more than anything else, and that's forgiveness and what it means. It's also very, very hard for the eyes to understand that kind of forgiveness. It would totally take you out of the mentality that you're in. So what it says, and so on and so forth, the Course also can be, Jim is kind enough to carry this, it's Miracles Unplugged. Miracles Unplugged is all three books, and what they've done is they've taken out the experiential associations and references that you would have if you have hang-ups or non-hang-ups about Christianity. When you hear Lord and you hear Jesus and you hear all of that, and then you can have a whole fight with the fact that Mary's not mentioned and all this other stuff, okay? I did not have any of those problems with the Course, but I did sit down and read this, and for those of you that, it doesn't change anything of what the Course says, but it has taken out the words such as Holy Spirit.
What does it replace it with?
With spiritual interpreter.
Okay.
It's very objective. And I really went through it to see, because I'm, you know, marinated in there. I went through it just to see, you know, what the heck. And I don't think they've done a bad job. For instance, Course in Miracles calls it an altar, A-L-T-A-R, and they call it our sacred mind, because the Course is referring to your mind. The Course says brother, and people have so many problems with that because it doesn't say sister and because it doesn't say goddess and blah, blah, blah. So they have neutralized it to companion. Okay? Instead of child, because people don't want the child that was born in the manger and this whole thing, so it becomes expression. Okay? So that's one of the ways to read the Course without getting hung up on the language. And all the eyes, of course it happens with the Course in Miracles crowd, all the eyes are out there having fits over the fact that when Helen Schuckman channeled the Course and Bill Thetford wrote down everything, that they edited it and that they didn't put in this and they didn't put in that. And, you know, have you ever been to a meeting? The Course in Miracles people are no different, okay? And so this is the your text, which means they put in everything. Okay, and it's if you really become apasionada, really truly passionate about the Course, this is, you know, you're a scholar, you want to go in here and look and see what they left out and what they didn't leave out and all that other stuff. But I you know, the Course itself is quite wonderful. And then just one more thing, and Jim's got a whole bunch of other books over here that are wonderful. Kenneth Wapnick's, the soft cover version, glossary. Robert Perry is in Sedona, and he's one of the teachers. There are many, many, many teachers. Get on YouTube, see what they say, and so on. I don't like the Course interpreted for me. I figure I've got a mind, and I've got intelligence, and I've got the Holy Spirit. And I'll just trudge along, you know. But I think it's worth looking at them if you're really passionate about the intellectual aspect. These are wonderful. You can take, these are cards on the Course in Miracles. Jim doesn't have it here today, but I know he gets them. And that's, you have a card for every single one of the 365 lessons. And I put it on my dashboard when I drive and practice, and it does not send me into some kind of coma. So that's about it. Also, read children's books like Animal Defenses and Fish Do the Strangest Things and Wild Animals Fight, and I dare you to tell me the difference between human beings' eyes and this, okay? We're copying and copying and copying like crazy. So if you go to the library, pull some of the stuff out. And yeah, I think that's it. Jim would like to tell you An announcement?
An announcement coming up.
Okay. So thanks very, very much. Hope it was worthwhile to you, and I know you're like at this time, but this is scratching the surface, and thanks for coming very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Helena.